welcome back to Video Nasties. My name is Maxwell Haddad. Thank you for listening. So, on today's episode, I will be discussing The Wolf of Wall Street, among others. I'll also be watching another movie tonight that recently premiered on streaming, featuring Margot Robbie. I won't tell you what it is. That's your hint. It's probably too big a hint to tell you a specific actress in the movie, but she's in it. I love Margot Robbie. I think she's gorgeous. She's a goddess. And she also happens to be able to act. She can act. She's a good actress. I wouldn't say she's a great actress, but she's a good actress. One second, sorry. I think it's her beauty, her look, that has really made her famous. But I think her performance as Sharon Tate in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a great performance. And her performance in The Wolf of Wall Street is good as well. She also shows her tits, which I had no idea. I had no idea that there existed a movie with Margot Robbie's tits in it. My inner Mr. Skin was like ready to film the TV while watching it, post it online, even though I'm sure it's... shots from the bear posted everywhere. She shows her tits. She also, like, almost goes full frontal. Like, you almost see puss, but... and, like, it's obvious that she shaved, which Jordan Belfort intimates earlier that he's into that. So, yeah, this movie is, as you may have guessed from what I've already described, it is over-sexualized. Which is one of the problems I had with the movie. Now, it's also depicting a world that was very chauvinistic, so that's part of the fabric of what Scorsese was trying to do, in my opinion. I like The Wolf of Wall Street. I like the movie. Like might be too strong a word. I think it's a good movie, and I liked certain scenes. I liked things about it, but it's not really for me. As a movie, I thought it was a little bit goofy, a little bit overdone, a little bit garish, overlong. Leonardo DiCaprio overacts, even though I think at the same time it's a great performance. Yeah, it's kind of a hard movie for me to review, first of all, because I didn't finish it. I think I got about an hour into it. I got to the scene where he has that big fight with his wife in front of the hotel, and then that's when I stopped it. I think right after the first time he fucks Margot Robbie. I think it's like right after that scene. Yeah, it is, because then he's snorting blow off of her tits in the back of the limo or whatever it is, and then his wife shows up and says, "Oh, it's that whore from the party," whatever. That's, if you've seen the movie, it's that scene. That's where I stopped. So I think it's about an hour in, and I think the movie's like almost 3 hours long. I don't even know how long it is. 2.5 to 3 hours, somewhere in there. I want to say it's like 2 hours, 47 minutes. I don't know where I'm getting that figure from, but in the scene where I stopped it, there actually was a nice shot of the exterior of the hotel, the front of the hotel. I like the way it's shot, obviously. I mean, it's Scorsese. He's a great master, and he's one of my favorite filmmakers. This is not one of his better movies. It's maybe one of the better late period Scorsese movies. That could be argued. But even that, I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites. I actually like Silence better, and I've only seen like the very, very beginning of Silence. Silence is a weird one to find on streaming because it was available, and then it disappeared. And now you have to pay for it, and it makes me angry. And I also love The Irishman. I vastly prefer The Irishman to The Wolf of Wall Street, even though The Irishman is even longer. It's like 4 hours long, but The Irishman is a great movie, in my opinion, and this is not a great movie. However, there are definitely good things about it, strong things about it. My favorite scene was actually the Spike Jonze scene. I thought Spike Jonze was great in the movie. I think he's supposed to be gay, but it's never really clear. Basically what happens, just to give you some of the story, is that it starts when Jordan Belfort is already rich. And this is a true story. It is a biopic of sorts, although it doesn't reek of the things that make biopics annoying and tedious. To me, it was closest to Goodfellas, actually, in terms of Scorsese's filmography. It reminded me of Goodfellas a lot, even though it's a very different story. Although maybe it actually isn't that different. You know, it's about an ambitious man rising to the top ranks of the world that he exists in. In this case, the industry that he exists in, which is stock market, stockbroker, investment banker world. So, the world of the stock market, basically. But specifically for him, the world of stockbrokers. So, he, it starts out with him, let's see, he's already rich, and then it goes back in time, and you see basically his rise to the top, which I guess is, like, the whole movie. Or, not the top, but the rise to the point that he gets to, which is, you know, house, I mean, mansion, beautiful wife, played by Margot Robbie, yacht, whatever, horses, you know, whatever the fuck. So, one second, sorry. So it starts out, and, he's already rich, and then it goes back to him starting out in the stock market. He's finally, you know, he does well. He's finally, officially a stockbroker, I guess. And that his, and his first day as a stockbroker is, Black Monday. So stock market crashes, everybody's getting out. Well, they can, he gets out. But then he finds this ad in the paper, and he's married. He's already married at this point, but to a different woman, obviously, as I mentioned earlier. So he finds this ad in the paper for, you know, they're looking for stockbrokers, but it's at this little company out in Long Island or something. So he drives there, and it's the Spike Jonze scene. Again, my favorite scene in the movie so far. And, he finds out that they're, you know, he's running, Spike Jonze is running this little operation. And he learns about this thing called Pink Sheets, where you can make 50% commission, compared to whatever he was making before, 8% commission or something. And it's all about commission for these guys, which you learn earlier in the, my other favorite scene in the movie, which is the Matthew McConaughey scene, where you find out that McConaughey's character jerks off twice a day. It's their kind of lunch scene where he's snorting blow and he's kind of like pounding on his chest. It's kind of like a famous scene now, I guess. And this is a very like memed movie at this point because it is memeable. But it does some, it is a little goofy at times. And it's depicting a world that is, and not to get into this stuff, but it's depicting a world that is misogynistic. But then the movie itself is, I think, borderline misogynistic. At least by today's standards. I mean, the movie, when I say today's standards, it's not like it's an old movie, but it is, I mean, it is almost 10 years old at this point, so it is a different movie era. And this was, this movie does kind of, interestingly and perhaps ironically, it does kind of represent the end of an era, the end of a certain movie era, a certain kind of movie. I'm tempted to say that this movie wouldn't be made now or couldn't be made now. I mean, with Scorsese, it probably could. But even with The Irishman, I mean, it was made for Netflix. I mean, I believe it got a theatrical. But even that, 2019, it was already, only 6 years later, it was already a different era. So, anyway, moving on. Oh, yeah, and then, what's his name? Jonah Hill comes into the movie, and he's good in the movie. He does give a good performance. I believe he was nominated for an Oscar for it, and as was Leo. But then Leo finally won his Oscar 2 years later for The Revenant. And Jonah Hill has never won an Oscar, which is probably for the better. But he is good in this movie. You know, it's a real performance. He plays a real character, and he's his weird kind of sidekick in the movie. So I think I want to move off of The Wolf of Wall Street just because I don't have too much to say about it right now. I have to finish the movie. So I'll talk about other movies that I watched. Namely, I want to talk about Star 80, which I watched last night, which there is a whole episode. Sorry, I'm just jotting down some notes as I'm talking. There is a whole episode of the Video Archives podcast about Star 80. And I recommend that you go and listen to that podcast. The whole it's a special episode of the podcast because usually they talk about two movies, the double feature, and then a third bonus kind of exploitation-y third movie. But in the case of Star 80, they did a whole episode about just one movie, and it was Star 80. And then they had the after show as well. So there's a lot of Star 80 talk on that podcast, in those two episodes. So I highly recommend that. This isn't going to be better than that, but, you know, I have my own take on the movie. And I also listened to those episodes before I'd seen the movie, and I also don't remember much of what was said. So, and some of those, I will cover some of the same ground, and as always, there will be spoilers. I hate to use that term, but yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, and it's also based on a true story, so if you know the story, it can't really be spoiled. And I did know the story going in because I listened to a different podcast, perhaps Karina Longworth's podcast. I don't think it was those. I think it was a TCM special, like 5 or 6 episode podcast with Peter Bogdanovich, where he talks about Dorothy Stratton and what happened. He is a pivotal part of the story. He plays an integral role in what happened. It is partly his fault, in my opinion. Not that he necessarily did anything wrong, although I think he did. He was carrying on with a married woman. But so, yeah, I mean, he did do something wrong, and he did do something criminal, but you can't necessarily say that what happened was his fault, or was partially his fault, although I believe it was, but that's a matter of opinion. So, everybody in the movie goes by their, or every character in the movie is given the name of the real person, except for Peter Bogdanovich, which I thought was really interesting. Aram, I think. I kept being like, what is his name? Aram? Or I thought it was Aaron at one point, but I guess it's A-R-A-M. Aram. It's interesting that he's the only one whose name was changed. So you have Hugh Hefner in the movie, and he's Hugh Hefner. That's what they call him. Dorothy Stratton. Of course, the best performance that I'll talk about on this whole episode, which is Eric Roberts as Paul Snyder, and I'll get to that, don't worry. But then also Dorothy Stratton's family, his lawyer. I don't know, maybe they did change some other names, I don't actually know. And then also the people who they ended up living with. They had these roommates, this other couple that they lived with in like this duplex situation. Anyway, so this is a true crime story, and to me, it's one of the more fascinating true crime Hollywood stories of its era. As soon as I heard, and I didn't, you know, I'd heard the name Dorothy Stratton, I'd heard Star 80, perhaps. It was all vaguely familiar to me, but I didn't know the story until I heard Peter Bogdanovich describe what happened. And it is a tragedy, but it's also fascinating. I don't think it's nearly as fascinating as Manson. And it's also happened later than Manson, but it is perhaps in that same league of just like Hollywood weirdness and intrigue. So basically what happened, for those who don't know, Paul Snyder was this kind of grifter type, who was living in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. The story starts there in 1978, I believe. And the movie came out in 1983. So, I mean, it was made so soon after the actual events, which is a little unusual for it to be that soon, especially back in those days. And they do talk about that on Video Archives. Anyway, I'm not going to reference Video Archives too much because this is my own take on the movie. So, one of the interesting things to me about the movie was that we get some of Dorothy Stratton's backstory, and we meet her family, we meet her brother, her younger sister, her mother, they're part of the story. But with Paul Snyder, we don't know anything about this guy. We don't know anything about his past. We don't get any backstory on him. We don't know anything about his family. We don't meet any of his family members. So that creates an interesting kind of dynamic where we know a lot more about Dorothy Stratton than we do about Paul Snyder. Paul Snyder basically remains a mystery for the whole movie, except through Eric Roberts' great performance, we do kind of learn who this guy is, even though we never find out where he's coming from. We know where he's going, if we know the story, we being the audience, but we never find out anything about his past, so he is a mystery. But just through Eric Roberts' mannerisms and the way he interacts with people, we learn who this guy is, in a sense. But that's only because Eric Roberts gives a great performance. So, where was I going with that? So, yeah. Okay, so yeah, it starts in Canada. Eric Roberts plays Paul Snyder, who's this kind of grifter type. He meets Dorothy Stratton, who's at the time working at a Dairy Queen. I was reminded of Red Rocket a little bit, actually. I don't know if Sean Baker based anything off of this, like, you know, very loosely, obviously. It's a very different story, but I don't know. I was just reminded of that. So, and also, just a note, one of the problems that I had with the movie was the editing. It starts off with Eric Roberts, sweaty, in a room, plastered with pictures of Dorothy Stratton and this kind of, like, shrine to her. Actually, the very beginning is this interview, which is a real interview that had been conducted with Dorothy Stratton, but Muriel Hemingway is, you know, reading Dorothy Stratton's lines, and then we see some nude shots, so, like, Muriel Hemingway is, like, showing tits, like, right at the beginning of the movie. A little surprising, a little shocking. And that right there is represents two of the problems, my main problems with the movie. One of them being the editing. I thought there were too many cuts. I thought it jumped around too much. Some of that is Bob Fosse just kind of being like a coked out maniac. And also not being a great director. Although I would say the movie is well directed to a certain degree. And I would say he was probably a good director in a certain sense to some people. I'm not a fan personally. He was, I'm sure, a great theater director, but film director, I don't think he was great. But anyway. So, yeah, and then one of my main problems with the movie was the editing, as I said. Another of my main problems with the movie was Muriel Hemingway. Not specifically her performance, because I think it's a good performance, but really just the casting of Muriel Hemingway. I don't really know what Dorothy Stratton looks like to this day, but I don't think that she bears much resemblance. I don't think she captures the spirit. And her performance is a little flat. I guess, yeah, I shouldn't say it's a good performance. I mean, it's an okay performance. It's decent. I think it's obvious that she can act, that she's at least a decent actress. You can tell that from watching this movie, but I just think Dorothy Stratton probably had, from the way I've heard her described, she had this sort of, like, vivaciousness and this kind of, like, I don't know, this kind of star quality. Not that Muriel Hemingway didn't have a star quality, but just this kind of, like, I don't know, this certain charisma or magnetism. Muriel Hemingway is just a little flat in the movie, a little one note. And obviously Muriel Hemingway is more of like a movie star than Dorothy Stratton was, even though Dorothy Stratton didn't have as much opportunity to be that just because of her untimely death, so, which I'll get to in a minute. So, okay, like the movie itself, I'm jumping around a little bit. Sorry, so to get back into it, it's interesting how the dynamic switches, because by the end of the movie, Dorothy Stratton is the one who's making movies and making money, and Paul Snyder is kind of like the loser, whereas at the beginning, she's just like working at a Dairy Queen, and she's like a teenager, like about to graduate high school. And he ends up taking her to her prom, actually, and he stabs this asshole football player who took her virginity and then told everyone that she was a lousy lay. He, like, stabs him with this little, like, penknife thing, which shows his violent tendencies early on. So that was the prom scene. Anyway. Oh, another thing that reminded me of Red Rocket is that, if you notice, I think every time that... I don't know if this holds true for the whole movie. It probably doesn't, but from what I could tell, every time Fosse cinematographer, who was Sven Nykvist, I think, who's like a famous cinematographer. I don't know too much about his work, but I know I've seen the name many times. I think he was like one of the biggest cinematographers at that time, early 80s, but. The way they shoot Eric Roberts as Paul Snyder is always from below, looking up. So I had this theory in my Red Rocket review on this podcast that the character in Red Rocket, Mike, was that his name? I forget his name, but he thinks with his dick, so he's looking at the world from below, looking up. In the case of Paul Snyder, he's kind of like also thinking with his dick. He has the personality of a pimp, which is how Hugh Hefner describes him in one scene, which is maybe the most important line in the whole movie. And it's also ironic that Hugh Hefner is saying this, because Hugh Hefner is the biggest pimp in the world at that time. So he's talking about himself when he says that. He also immediately apologizes for saying it. He's talking to Dorothy Stratton, and he says, you know, Paul's got the personality of a pimp. I just thought that was a really interesting line, and as I said, the most important line in the movie, in my opinion. So, anyway. So, why did they shoot him like this? Well, one, thinking with his dick. Two, he's kind of this little creature. He kind of shrinks himself down, makes himself smaller. He's kind of like this insect crawling around, he's kind of a sad little man. I don't know how to say it. But I think it's also you're looking up at him, so he looks bigger and taller, and it makes him imposing. And he is the movie's antagonist. So you're supposed to be kind of perhaps intimidated by him, but you're supposed to be a little afraid of him, I think. As the audience, he's basically the villain of the movie, so I think it just kind of makes him look scarier in a way, shooting him from below, looking up. If this is a monster movie, Paul Snyder is the monster. That's my point, and that's perhaps why they shot him that way. So he's with this woman, and he's got this car, and they're in these nice fur coats, which Dorothy Stratton notices. And they show up at this Dairy Queen, and Paul's just immediately taken with this girl, and he's immediately hitting on her. And eventually they meet up outside the Dairy Queen, and he kind of like takes her under his wing as like one of his girls, but like kind of his main girl. He's immediately smitten with this girl. Now, part of the structure of this movie, and this is the third main problem that I had with this movie. So I had three big problems with this movie. The editing, it was over-edited. Muriel Hemingway's performance, flat. And then the other problem I had with this movie was the interview structure. It's got like this, like what they do on reality TV shows, where they just like cut to people being interviewed. and you see this in some, like, found footage movies, I think, now. Or, not now, but, you know, 10 years ago during the found footage boom. The unfortunate found footage boom. I hate that, like, cut to interview where it's just, like, one of the characters sitting there giving an interview, talking about the events. Or one of the actors sitting there talking about the events. I mean, it works on reality TV, but I'm talking about, like, in a movie, it just takes you out of the movie immediately, so I don't like that. And I just realized Paul Snyder's the only one who they don't do that with. They do it with Dorothy Stratton. She talks about meeting him there at the Dairy Queen and seeing him for the first time. And then you see the actual meeting. And then he decides that he just thinks this girl is amazing, and he decides that he's going to take some pictures of her, and I believe he decides, like, pretty early on that he's going to try to get her into Playboy, which eventually it does happen. He takes pictures of her, he sends it to this photographer, who I guess he knows, and the photographer takes pictures of her, and then a kind of bigger photographer takes pictures of her. Eventually these pictures get to Hugh Hefner. Hugh Hefner likes her. She ends up at the mansion, at the parties that they have there. One thing leads to another. She ends up Playmate of, not the year, or maybe she was eventually Playmate of the Year, but Playmate of, she ends up as, like, the November centerfold. So Playmate of the Month, I guess, basically. And I believe, and then she brings Paul Snyder to the mansion, the Playboy mansion, and he has this kind of awkward interaction with one of the guests there, this actor, and then with Hugh Hefner himself, and I think that's when his rage really starts to come out. That's, like, when he first yells at Dorothy, the first time you see that, and he's never invited back to the mansion, and that's, I think, when his jealousy really starts to come out. And then Dorothy somehow is up for this part, for this director, Aram, who's in real life Peter Bogdanovich. Rest in peace. And she ends up in, they don't call it They All Laughed, but I believe in real life it was They All Laughed. So she goes to New York to shoot it. She begins having an affair with Aram. And when she gets back, Paul Snyder blows her head off with a shotgun and then kills himself. And that's how it ends. So to backtrack a little bit, there is this one scene where she's crying in a bathtub and she actually begs Paul. She wants to go back to Canada. She wants to leave this all behind. And he's the one who tells her, no, you need to go to New York. You need to become a movie star. I'm going to stay here in LA. I'm going to work on this poster. He's, like, obsessed with making these posters. He's like, he's kind of like a craftsman type guy. Like, he makes, like, early on, you see he made this, like, weird, like, metal flowers, like, this art that he tried to sell. He's, like, he's very much a salesman. He's always trying to, like, he's always, like, making stuff and trying to sell it. He's a very interesting character. Very interesting. By far the most interesting character in this whole story. And I do see myself in that character a little bit, I have to admit. Which made me a little nervous, perhaps a little too much. I hope I'm not that awkward and creepy and crazy, but I do see some of that. I'm not, like, the huckster that he is, but I just, he would always, early on, you find out that he always remembered everyone's name. That's the thing that I'm most reminded of myself in this guy. That reminds me the most of myself about this guy, I should say. I guess he could meet somebody once, and 5 years later, he would remember their name. And Dorothy was the opposite. She was this kind of airhead who just couldn't remember anybody's name. And he even says to her at one point on the phone, he says, you have to try to remember people's names. And I think one of the reasons he got as far as he did, even though he never achieved any real success, I think one of the reasons he got as far as he did is that he had this ability to remember people's names. It seems like a simple thing, but I think it's actually a pivotal part of what got him, you know, whatever little success he had. I mean, he is the reason that Dorothy Stratton got into Playboy. Like, he discovered her. Paul Snyder discovered Dorothy Stratton. Now, of course, that doesn't excuse what he did. I mean, yeah, he discovered her, but he also took her life. But, you know, it's, I think you have to remember that he, there would be no Dorothy Stratton without Paul Snyder. That's all I'm saying. So, oh, right. So then, yeah, so he makes these posters for her. He wants her to be like this Farrah Fawcett type. You know, everybody's got a poster of her up on their wall. So he makes these posters for her. It's not clear whether or not she actually likes the posters. It's just at that point, she just wants a clean break from him. She doesn't even want them to be, she doesn't want them to be life partners anymore, but she doesn't want them to be business partners anymore. Or I guess not life partner, romantic partners. That happens at the end, at like the pivotal ending scene where he ends up killing her with the shotgun. But he also makes, and apparently, and they do talk about this briefly on the Video Archives episode, he builds this like weird like sex machine, like this, because he makes these like these benches, like these, I guess, bench press benches, I don't know what you would call them, like benches that you can work out on. And he was always like upset. He was always obsessed with his image, and like he was always combing his hair, and he liked to work out. And then apparently, I think they talk about this on the Video Archives, and apparently this is something that was added for the movie. This was not real, I think, is what they said. He builds this like sex bench thing where I guess you can strap like a woman onto it and like spread her legs and fuck her on it. It's like a very kind of weird kinky detail that I actually really liked in the movie. And it actually comes into the movie at the very end, and it just adds this like one extra thing, this extra level of kind of like freakishness or like kinkiness that I liked. I thought the movie kind of needed it. At the end, there needed to just be an extra kind of like punch. It wasn't enough just to have him shoot her, especially because, I mean, it is bloody at the end, but it's just not like gory enough. Like, he really should have like blown her fucking head off, because I think that's really what happened. Plus, you have a pump action shotgun and you shoot somebody in the head at close range, I mean, that like point blank range, their head's gonna fucking explode like a melon, and that doesn't really happen in the movie. Which was maybe out of respect for Dorothy, or maybe because it was a Hollywood movie, they didn't want to have an exploding head in it. I don't know. And that might have been too much, but that's what I would have done. But you know I love exploding heads, so there you go. So, all right, I just found out that my prescription is ready at CVS, so I'm actually going to cut this episode short. I still want to talk about Throne of Blood by Akira Kurosawa. Oh, okay, so one other thing I wanted to mention. No, I already kind of talked about it. Oh, yeah, all right, so there's this weird character. I don't even know how he meets Paul or, like, where. He just kind of shows up in the movie. He ends up being his, like, downstairs, him and Dorothy's downstairs roommate in this duplex, him and this girl he's seeing. He's got a Rolls Royce, this character, this guy who shows up kind of, like, in the third act or, like, just after the halfway. Yeah, kind of in the third act. So he and this woman are not at home at the time of Dorothy and Paul's death, but he's got this Rolls Royce, right? He's got this big dog, this big German Shepherd, and he's got this Rolls Royce parked in the garage. And I'm thinking, if this motherfucker can afford a Rolls Royce, why is he living in this shitty little duplex by the freeway with this crazy motherfucker, Paul Snyder? It's never explained in the movie. And there is this weird detail where Paul Snyder, I think it's right after Dorothy leaves for New York, he builds this, like, dog, he builds a dog house for the dog, this big dog house, which I didn't think was that weird. It kind of, like, makes sense for the character, but the movie presents it as, like, this weird, just this weird detail. And I don't know, maybe, I don't know if it's a real detail or not. I don't know if this really happened, but this character is, like, he built a dog house. I don't know why. Anyway, I didn't really like this guy. I didn't really like the character. I think I recognized the actor from other movies at the time, but I'm not sure. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know. Just to jump to Throne of Blood in case I don't get on here later. This is my favorite Akira Kurosawa movie, at least right now. I'm into it. It's an interesting movie. I think it's Macbeth, based on Macbeth. I'm not sure. There's a witch character. It's the only Akira Kurosawa movie I've seen that incorporates a supernatural element. So there's this weird, almost like horror movie aspect to the movie. Toshiro Mifune's character and this other samurai takes place in feudal Japan, and I love the costumes. I don't understand why they have so much armor upstairs, you know, on the top half of their bodies, and then on the lower half they're wearing like these like puffy pants. They almost look like fucking pajama pants. Like, how is that gonna, what if they get stabbed in the dick, you know, like how, what is that gonna defend against? But anyway, not here to judge. So, and they could be wearing some kind of jock strap apparatus. Anyway, so they end up in the woods in this kind of like bamboo forest, and they find this witch in this weird, and she's like bathed in this pool of white light, and she's in this weird kind of like white cage, I don't know, maybe made of bamboo, and she's spinning this wheel, and it's, this yarn is turning on this thing. It's not like a loom, but it's like this yarn spinny thing. I don't know. It's this really kind of cool scene. And it's just interesting. It's kind of an interesting movie. I was going to say I'm mildly obsessed with it right now. I wouldn't go that far. I think it's a little boring, like most or all of Kurosawa's movies. And then it deals with, I don't know, heirs and taking over as the lord of this area, this precinct. I don't know what the fuck to call it. I don't really know how to describe the plot. I'm not quite sure what's going on at certain points in the movie. But check it out. It's kind of a cool, interesting Akira Kurosawa movie. I'm going to sign off right now. I'm going to go to CVS, and hopefully I'll be back on later for more video nasties. Peace.